And I want to hear from the guys. We got a few guys in here. Let me hear from you about this, because it's easier for the ladies, okay? Guys, what moves you to tears? What moves you to tears, guys? What does it take? The reason I'm asking the guys is because, you know, guys, you know, in our culture, society, you know, guys aren't supposed to cry, right? But yet we all know that's a fallacy.
Yeah.
Okay? So what does it take?
Compassion for someone else's problems.
Okay? But why the tears? What is it that makes you cry?
Well, to me too. Sometimes when you're trying to explain something to somebody, and they finally get what you're trying to tell them,
okay.
You know, especially when it comes to the scriptures and all, sometimes that moves me to tears.
Okay. All right. So sometimes it's tears of joy that are there. Okay. All right.
That would have been very similar to what Paul felt, you know, when he had conversion.
Yeah, like Ray saying over here about Stephen, thinking about that.
Right, yeah.
Okay. You know, it seems to me, and I know, like for myself, it's when I hurt inside because someone else is hurting. That's where I have a lot of difficulty, you know. You know, those kinds of situations where even when I feel, you know, kind of helpless to be able to, you know, to fix whatever the situation is or to, you know, to change it in some way, but you just kind of, I feel kind of helpless at those times, but yet this person is hurting and I can't do anything about it, and that gets to me. You know?
Have you ever seen these clips that's been on TV for the last 4, 5, 6 months or less? A father would come home from the war and surprise his kids.
Yeah.
His kids. He can't help but understand what they're feeling and what he's feeling.
Yeah.
At that time.
I would like to think that because I am who I am,
say the right thing, it made them feel a little bit, give them a little bit more peace. It's a hard thing to do.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. You know, we typically, again, you know, for guys, it's something, you know, we don't like to show our emotions sometimes. You know, that's the stereotype, so to speak. You know, men don't cry, and, you know, all that kind of thing. But I don't believe that's true, not in my experience. They may not do it outwardly, they may not do it where other people can see, but men do cry. You know, here we've got Paul. You look at the words that he's saying here. I serve the Lord with great humility and with tears. You know, to have that mind of a servant, say, to be willing to do what needs to be done, whatever the master says to do, and to have the kind of compassion that allows you to serve in that kind of way. And to do it where you're at the point of tears because you know that people need this message, and without it, people are going to be lost. And then again, I think, Ray, you know, your point you brought up, you know, probably never forgot the incident of Stephen stoning, and you know, probably weighed on Paul a lot, you know, in terms of all that. Okay, we don't want to discriminate in here this morning. So, you know, what about ladies? Do ladies, any of y'all want to have a comment on that in terms of crying and so forth? What moves you to tears, Betty?
Well, I'm not going to discriminate because everybody cries sometimes or another in their life. No gender definition. Everybody cries, but for me, tears is a relief. It's a stress relief.
Okay.
When I cry, I am usually, I'm deaf.
Okay.
All of Paul's difficulties, he never stopped. He kept forward. And what he's doing, he's a man.
Yeah.
How frustrated is he kid with all the trouble that he faced on the way?
What is it that probably was Paul's greatest source of frustration and you know, anxiety and hardship and persecution and so forth? What was his greatest source of that? Yeah, it was the Jews. Okay, but yet, though that was his greatest source of all of those problems and so forth, how much compassion did Paul have for the Jews?
He had great passion, but he knew where they were coming from.
Right, yeah.
And he was frustrated, and that he couldn't bring Christ to them.
Even to the point where at one point says, you know, look, if they could be saved and I lose my soul, then, you know, I'd be willing to do that. That's paraphrase, of course. But, you know, he has that much care and compassion for his people. He wants them to be saved. But yet, they're rejecting the very thing that would save their souls. Okay? Can I get somebody to go to Luke 19:41-44 and read that for us? The question here, why did Jesus cry over Jerusalem? Luke 19:41-44. go to 19.
As he drew near, he saw the city and wept over it, saying, he had known each of you, especially in those days, the things that make for your peace. But now they are hidden from your eyes. The days have come upon you, and the enemies that build and embarking around you, surround you and close you in on every side, and love you, and you turn your fingers to the ground, and they will not believe in one son upon another, because you did not know.
What's he talking about here? What is he predicting? No, it's actually the destruction of Jerusalem that occurred in AD 70 is what he's predicting. He's telling them is going to happen. Okay? But notice that that he says here, Luke tells us here, verse 41, as he approached Jerusalem and saw the city, okay, he wept over it. Why is Jesus weeping over these people who have, as he says, the very last thing, you didn't recognize the time of God's coming to you? Why is he weeping over these people that have rejected him? I'm sorry? They're going to be lost, but why is he weeping for them? Thank you. Because he loves them. Remember, we talked about God is love. They are His creation. And not only His creation, but these are His chosen people. Okay. And they have rejected Him. And so we see Jesus here as He's looking at the city full of these people that have rejected Him as the Messiah, the very one that they were looking forward to coming, and he weeps. Okay? He weeps for them. Because he knows what's getting ready to happen. Okay? So we see this kind of compassion in John chapter 11. Shortest verse in all of the Bible. Okay? Verse 35, what is it? Jesus wept. Okay? Now, what's the situation going on here? Lazarus has died. Jesus comes there to Bethany and he greets Lazarus' sisters. And what's taking place here? He sees their grief. My brother would not have died. The interesting thing about this text, that verse, verse 35 there, Jesus wept, and I've said this many, many times before, literally, you know, we need to understand what that saying is, God cried. Okay, God cried. But the literal translation of that word weeping in this point really is an indication. It's saying, it indicates someone who is snorting like a horse. Okay, is what that really means. Okay, so it's not just a crying like we would typically think of a crying. Okay, if somebody is, you know, sad or what have you. Jesus is not crying here in this situation because he's simply sad that Lazarus has passed away. And, you know, and Mary and Martha are full of sorrow because their brother died. Okay? He is literally snorting like a horse. Okay? That kind of weeping, what does that indicate? Colonel, you've heard this before, haven't you? What does it indicate? Why is Jesus snorting like a horse? You really need to understand this.
He took on their grief.
Okay. All right. Okay. That's partially right, but there's more to it. What else? Okay. He's angry. He's angry. He's angry source of this pain and hurt that his loved ones are going through. What is that anger? What's the source of that anger?
Satan.
Satan and death. Thus, Jesus wept. It is the shortest verse in all of the Bible, but I suggest to you that it is one of the most powerful statements that the Scriptures record for us because of what it's really saying. And I think that because most people don't really understand the meaning of that statement, we really miss the impact of what it's really saying. That all of those emotions are there, that, and as Colonel was talking about, you know, that Jesus is experiencing the love that he had for his friend Lazarus and the hurt that Martha and Mary are feeling, and knowing that he could stop it all right now. Right now. Right? But yet he has to allow God's plan to work its way through. Okay. Ray?
I mentioned this thing before. My mother is the one who doesn't feel a lot of upset and emotion. Even when her mother passed, but she took care of her. And my mother stepped down with you, but with my, when her grandson died, which is my nephew, that made everything. I really found out what it was like. And to see that boy land in his casket and know he'll never get over it. And I wrote an article. And my mother read the article sitting right there on that bench. She cried and cried and cried. And then couldn't stop her crying. Because it finally hit her. That, you know, because I don't think, although that's the way my mother was, but and is. But the thing is, I can't explain. But I'm gonna tell you, man, that when a child dies, I mean, some of us may have gone through that, but if you've never been through it, you never know what it's like until it happens.
You know, when you think about Jesus at this moment, you know, there's not only the death of Lazarus and the hurt that Mary and Martha and all of them were feeling, and as I just said a moment ago, as Colonel was talking about, you know, the whole thing of Jesus, you know, knowing he's got the power to fix all of this right now. But then there's also the impact that I'm convinced that Jesus was feeling at that moment too. He was weeping for you and I today too. Okay. For all of the stuff that we go through because of what Satan has done. Okay. At that moment, God was crying for his creation, I think, in total. It includes us today. And even though, you know, he was going to go to the cross and he was going to make a remedy for that, but yet still, are people lost today? Are his creation still being lost? See? And at that time, Jesus knew that. He knew and he felt the destructive work of Satan on his creation. And so, yeah, he was snorting like a horse. But he had such compassion for his creation. You look at Mark chapter 6 and verse 34. There it tells us that Jesus looked at the people there and he had compassion on them. Why? It says because they were like sheep without a shepherd. Okay? And what happens to sheep who don't have a shepherd? Go astray, they get lost, and they get eaten. Yeah, they get eaten. Okay. And so, do you get this sense that God has this compassion? We talked about a lot of this, you know, at the beginning of our study here, looking at the compassion that God has for His creation. Okay. And what is the real deep source of that compassion? It is realizing and knowing, see, what His creation is having to go through and what we're up against. And knowing that so much of His creation is going to be destroyed. Thus, the compassion that he felt for looking over the city of Jerusalem and knowing that so many of those people are going to be lost because they've rejected him. Now, God could have fixed all of that real easily had he not given us free will, thank you. See, then sin would not be a problem, would it? You see. But he didn't want us to return our affection and love to him because we had no choice. He wanted us to make a choice to do that, and that required him to give his creation a free will. When we exercise that free will, there are going to be some who are going to reject it. His creation. They were rejected. And so, yes, God cries over His creation. Cries over His creation. The author here of our study asks a couple of questions that I think, you know, we need to really think about. If we really care about someone, what will we do? How will we react? See, that's a question. Those are questions that we really need to be asking ourselves in terms of God's creation that we know, that we interact with, those in our Jerusalem especially. You know, we need to be thinking about that. Challenging ourselves. The mind of resolution. Paul continued on this course, pressing forward, and he did so even with all the trials and the tribulations that he faced in the pursuit of trying to save as much of God's creation as he could. What were some of the trials that Paul faced? The question asks here. What was some of the stuff that he faced in his pursuit of salvation for other people?
Beatings.
Jail.
Ridicule.
Okay, some kind of thorn in the flesh. I mean, he was just, you know, all kinds of stuff, right? You know? He faced a tremendous amount of abuse physical, emotional, mental, just hardships that he faced. You know, the shipwreck that he was involved in, you see. Here's a question that's not on your sheet, okay? What's that tell you about the task of being a servant of God in terms of the hardships and the struggles that we might face? Are we immune? Now, it may seem kind of obvious, but to a lot of people it's really not, because there are a lot of people that get really disappointed with Christianity because they think, once I become a Christian, then I'm not going to have to deal with any more problems in life. Okay? Which is really the opposite. Say,
perhaps a better question is, are we facing those things that Paul is, if not, then why not?
Why not? We need to be, we need to be understanding that, you know, as a servant, we're gonna have to face whatever it is that the master takes us through. Huh?
Sometimes I'm not sure people understand the gravity of becoming a Christian. I mean, imagine a police officer who's asked, "Oh, now that I'm a police officer, I'll be safe. I don't have to worry about anything." Or a fireman who says, "Oh, well, I don't have to worry about fire safety now that I'm a fireman." It's ridiculous.
Nice.
You would look at him and say, "You're a fool. You're going to be going into danger. You're going to be going into the fire. And you become a Christian. You've signed up to be in a spiritual war that's been going on since the beginning of time. So why would you think it would be easier? I mean, if you were drafted into the army,
you're going into battle.
Yeah. I mean, this is what you're going into. So to think that, oh, life is going to be easier now. Very strange to me."
Yeah. Well, or the fireman who, you know, goes to his first fire and goes, "I'm not going in there. You know, that place is on fire. I'm not going in that building." Oh, well, yeah, what did you think you were going to do as a fireman? You know, yeah, you expect, and you're going into it knowing, as a soldier of Christ, and that's why he gives us his armor to wear, right? Because we need it to go into the battles that we're going to be facing every day. You know, we have to go into it with that understanding. Turn over to 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 12. I'll get somebody to read that text for us. We need to understand this as Christians. What is the statement that Paul makes here to Timothy? Everyone... Somebody got it for us? Everyone who wants to live a godly life. What does it say here? Yes. Does that sound like a just a possibility, you know, that it's out there that maybe you will? It's kind of a matter-of-fact statement, isn't it? But, yeah. And Jerry, you know, what you said a moment ago, I think, you know, we need to look at it in that regard. You know, if I'm not struggling and I'm not suffering persecution, then maybe it's because Satan's not worried about me. You know, Kelly?
I think it's important to remember what persecution is. Because a lot of people feel like, oh, I'm having a hard time paying my bills.
Okay.
So I'm going through trials and persecution. And that's not the same thing.
Okay.
And persecution is people actually attacking you because of your belief in Jesus.
Okay.
Because you're trying to convince others to believe in Jesus.
Okay.
It's not just these little difficult things we have in our life because of the good or bad choices that we make. Persecution is more. And if you are not out teaching people about God, then you're not facing persecution.
Okay.
No matter what is happening, you're not dealing with persecution.
And that's, I think, you know, you're right, that may not be persecution, but at the same time, there are an awful lot of hardships and difficulties that people do face, just like Paul did, you know, the shipwreck he was in. It wasn't necessarily a result of persecution, it was, you know, we have to realize that I think a lot of times the things that we go through are things that God is putting us through, say, to challenge our faith. we're going to talk a little bit more about that this morning in our worship lesson, so I'm going to go into that a whole lot right now.
All to get our attention.
Yeah. The lesson there for us that he wants us to know. But then we have to look at, okay, so when these kinds of things are happening in our lives, what do we do with them? How do we react and respond? Look over in 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 8. How did Paul respond to the trials and tribulations and the persecutions and such that he suffered? Who's got that? Okay, what is he asking for here? That a door be opened, right? For the message. Do what? Is it verse 9? Okay, all right. Verse 8, verse 9. Keep reading. Keep fine. It's in there somewhere.
Somewhere in that chapter.
Yeah. But you know, facing the hardship, and what's his reaction? What's his response to it? You know, I'm looking for doors to be open, doors of opportunity that I can continue preaching. See? Rather than saying, hey, I'm out of here, I'm not going to put up with this, I'm leaving, you know. Hey, I'm not doing this, I didn't realize it would be so difficult. No, what he's saying is, I'm looking for opportunities here to be persecuted. You see, opportunities for doors to be opened so he can preach the word. Okay, so, Kelly, you brought up a point here a moment ago in terms of persecution. But not just persecution, but hardships, troubles, trials, tribulations. The question here, what are some of the troubles that we might face if we live godly lives among our friends and neighbors? Okay, there might be rejection. You know, they're going to stop being our friend. They're going to stop talking to us. What else?
Lose your job over it.
These days that's becoming more and more, you know, that's happening more and more. Here in America, it's happening more and more. And I think it's only going to get worse. What else? What are the kinds of hardships or troubles we face? Okay. So, you know, those are realities of trying to share the gospel with people. We're not wholesale being arrested, thrown in jail and beaten up because of our faith yet. But there have been even some incidents of some folks here in America that have been arrested for just simply standing in place of holding signs, not saying a word to anybody, but just, you know, and they have been arrested. Dolores, you have a hand?
Yeah, I was just thinking, I don't know if anybody else has experienced this, but just if you go somewhere to eat and you're standing there and you want to bow your head and pray, I think about it now, if there's somebody watching me to see, there, but you just don't know anymore.
Right.
You mean, you still do it.
Right.
You still do it, but you just don't know that somebody's gonna cause a problem because you're sitting in public.
Right. They can't stop you by that.
Right.
They may say something. How are you going to handle it? How are you going to react? How are you going to respond if they do that? Okay.
Well,
Jeff?
I used that the other day and had a new grade and I only came up with thank you. I don't think you can say what I can say.
Yeah. That's the plus side, isn't it?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Okay. Day. Okay, y'all just let me go right on past the time here. Nobody said anything. We're 5 minutes over time. All right. Okay, we're going to stop here. We're going to look at the method of the servant next week. Okay? And we will finish up with this lesson. Somebody say sure. I will put lesson 10 for you. I'll get those and put those out here on the thing for you. You can pick one of those up this morning.